interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Thursday to you. And it is a Thursday, September 12th edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming at you live and direct from the Taproom River Ranch. Ben Love here. The famous Clint D. Inside the 237 Roof Studios. For the next 3 hours, we got you. How about a joy ride home together on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. LSU coming into a joyful portion of the schedule. Cushy landing toward that first bye week in September. We'll lead off with the Tigers, but trust me, we'll get to the Saints. We'll get to the Cajuns in an interesting Thursday night football battle coming on the other side of this program. But as we lead with LSU and where the Tigers fit into the early season landscape in college football, hit us up, get in where you fit in, 706-0111. Tigers at 2-0, averaging 50 points per game on the season. And yet I think we all can find question marks if we want to. Excitement about the offense. Joe Burrow has transformed himself into, I don't know that we can say it's happened overnight, but he's transformed himself into clearly an upper echelon quarterback in the SEC, if not the country. And I remember on this program, maybe at this point 3 weeks ago, our first weekly run with Gordy Rush, Thursdays at 5, and the LSU football sideline reporter reacted to the news I shared with him quickly throughout the summer. Burrow was vaulting up Heisman odds and probabilities. And he said, look, I don't like to throw down the coin, and I'm not going to tell people where to put it, but I think it's reflecting the fact that those in the know have gotten to see LSU this summer. Now the rest of us have seen LSU through two games, and Burrow continues to be a trendy pick for the Heisman, maybe a first-round draft pick. And we'll hear a little bit later in this segment from his head coach about just where his health is and his availability for the Northwestern State game. But the offense has answered, I think, just about every question and more. Do we know everything that we need to about this offensive line? Probably not. I won't sit here and tell you that they've been tested to their fullest. Texas had a pretty good defensive front. They're not going to test LSU like Auburn's front will, Alabama's front, probably even Florida's front. But so far, they've passed the tests that have been put in front of them. Defensively, I think is where we can start to conjure up questions if we really force ourselves. And LSU going up against Northwestern State, and we'll see about Vandy in a week and a half. But at least against these demons in state, Ogeron said yesterday from his coach's show, they know on the defensive line they'll be without Rashard Lawrence, Glenn Logan as well. Kalavon Chaisson remains questionable.
Yeah, you know, most of our guys will be able to play. Rashard Lawrence will not play. Glenn Logan will not play. Kalavon is questionable. I don't know if he's going to play or not, but other than that, we're going to be fine.
So already you know that a couple of main cogs in the D-line, are out. All right, so what does that mean? I would hope that this is the game, that if Apu Aika is healthy, that he gets some more seasoning. And that was a big topic of conversation on this program yesterday. Where's the confidence level in him? Obviously, it wasn't quite there. James Moran, Tiger Rag Magazine, I think he agreed with me. They're feeling pretty good about Shelvin, but they know the conditioning's not there for him to play 55, 60-plus snaps a game. If Aika could spell him, boy, that would go a long way. And without Glenn Logan, maybe there's an opportunity for some of those next ends up to kind of get their wits about them, playing against Northwestern State. Let's get more from Ogeron as we get ready for LSU, playing an in-state opponent, but still an opportunity to maybe sharpen the blade a little bit. And O knows that they're going to have to rotate better on the defensive side beginning this week.
Going to have to alternate a lot of guys. We're not going to call them the go team or nothing like that, but we do need to alternate more. We have several guys out hurt this week, so we have to get them ready down the stretch. We're going to have to use more players.
Is that a 1958 Chinese Bandits reference? I'm not sure. Clint, you'll have to look it up and tell me. But Ogeron preparing that his defense will have to go next man up and then also get bodies in and out. More from the head coach at LSU, number four team in the country, and they've gotten there in large part on the shoulders of Joe Burrow. Ed O says here that, yeah, he's been dinged up a little bit this week. He maybe was encouraged, Burrow, to sit out of practice, but no, according to O, Burrow wouldn't do it.
You know, when you have a quarterback like Joe Burrow who had the opportunity today, he had a minor injury, still a little sore. He had the opportunity to sit out. He said, no, Coach, I'm practicing. I mean, he wants to be out there. He said, Coach, I got to stay in my rhythm. I want to be with my team. Guys are fighting to be out there. It's special. And we talk about the LSU standard of performance. It's not about anybody else. It's about how we practice. We set our marks high, and we need to attain those marks every day.
And more from Ed Ogeron on his starting quarterback. According to Ed, they haven't seen, nor have we, the best of Joe Burrow yet. I'm going to tell you, that is a mouthful. Kid just played the game of his life, so is it possible that he could take it to another level?
You know, Joe's a tremendous competitor. He's a baller. He's a coach's son. We're so glad that we have him. He is everything that you want in an LSU quarterback, in my opinion. He has all the intangibles, his strong arm, very smart, can run. We're glad that we have him. I got to give some credit to Steve Ensminger. He has done a tremendous job with Joe Burrow, so has Joe Brady. Give a credit to all our football team, but I do believe that Joe Burrow's just getting started. I don't think he's seen his best yet.
And with the way he's performed, Burrow, this offense, this team so far, LSU has jumped up to the number four spot in the country. How about a little time in this segment on where the Bayou Bengals fit in on the national scale? Would love to hear from you as well. 706-0111. Familiar names at the top. Clemson, Bama, Georgia. In the AP poll, Clemson, the defending champs, getting 56 first place votes. Bama 6, nil for the rest of us. But Georgia at number 3, followed by LSU. Oklahoma, Ohio State go 5-6. Both the Sooners and the Buckeyes moved down a spot to accommodate for LSU. I think that was the right call. After that, Notre Dame at 7. Don't know that they've blown anybody's socks off so far in this season. Two SEC teams at 8 and 9. Starting to get back to some of the old school days where you had, well, you know, four or five SEC teams in the top 10. Auburn's at 8. Florida's at 9. Finally, Michigan, and this is befuddling to me, is at 10. They moved down 3 spots after surviving Army in Ann Arbor. I don't think that's enough. But let's focus on some of these other contenders. And can you even use that moniker on Auburn and Florida? I would ask you this about those two. Which do you buy in more, if either, of those two options? What we know is this. Auburn's going to get a chance to play everybody. You're in the SEC West, you don't duck anything. And Auburn has proven that they're the team, you know, post-Hugh Freeze Ole Miss, most likely to topple Alabama. And so you don't count them out. The win over Oregon, I feel, was maybe a little more about the Ducks giving it away, but that's my opinion. The young kid Nick still had to step up and take it for Auburn. As for Florida, yeah, they've got an easier road to hoe. Now, they do play Georgia every year, and both of these teams do, and that gives you a heck of an opportunity. If you're Florida, even if you stumble once in the regular season but you beat top three Georgia, you got a chance to be there in the end against Bama or whoever represents the West in Atlanta. So I'm not sure that I particularly buy into either of those teams, but of the two, boy, I might just lean toward Auburn, which is scary. Florida's got the experienced quarterback. I just don't know that I trust Felipe Franks. But as I look at that top 10 that I just laid out, top to bottom, not sure there are any outside of that grouping that you would say, hey, I wouldn't forget about them, Ben. You know, you're going to look at me with a straight face and say, don't forget about Utah, UCF, Wisconsin, Penn State. Don't forget about those guys. Yeah, I might just set the snooze alarm on them. But as for these others into the top 10, you're never going to convince me that Oklahoma or Ohio State is out of the running for a Finals Four spot. And once you get there, a lot of things may be possible, unless you're Notre Dame. And I continue to believe the scenario that I laid out in the preseason is imminently possible, especially now that LSU's beaten Texas. That's a win that gives you leash. And so if you're LSU, you can. Not saying you should, but you can lose at Tuscaloosa in a tight game. Watch Bama beat Georgia, and I'm willing to guarantee that 11-1 LSU team finds its way into the playoffs. I'm willing to guarantee it. So I think the Tigers right now sitting in an awfully good spot. On the other side of this opening break, I'll ask you the toughest game that's left on the schedule, but you can't pick Bama. So get to thinking on it, and we'll continue a conversation. A lot of great convos coming up today between now and 7 o'clock. At the bottom of the hour, Lynn Scarborough, about 30 minutes from now, with Lindy's Magazine, we'll go SEC-wide. And he hails from the Yellowhammer State. So is he buying Auburn? Does he like anybody except Georgia in the East? All SEC with Lynn Scarborough at 4:45 and called it back-to-back. At straight up 5 o'clock, Gordy Rush, LSU football sideline reporter, joins the program. At 5:30, excited to welcome aboard, he'll step in live, Todd Russ with the Southwest Regional Coaches Clinic. They've got a huge event that's coming up, not this Saturday, but next. You love basketball in our state, stay tuned. Todd Russ hopping aboard at 5:30. Speaking of prep sports, from 6 to 6:30, Blaine Viator joins me as well, right across the table. We're going to go in on the Acadiana Area Top 5, the best Week 2 game, and Week 1 surprises and disappointments from our area on the prep gridiron. So stick with us. We're just getting started on a Thursday. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, having a blast at the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Right back at it from inside the Taproom River Ranch. Having some fun on a Thursday. Now it's time to get collaborative. We got some time, about 25 minutes specifically, before our interview with Lynn Scarborough, when he and I will chop it up on the SEC between now and then. We want to hear from you. 706-0111. Clint, how about the music? Then I'm going to roll the red carpet out. I got a question.
Love. Exciting and new.
A lot of people preseason thought this might be a year where LSU takes a big step forward. Yours truly was one of them, predicting 11-1. But the loss I had pegged is Bama. Today's question, which non-Bama game concerns you the most on LSU's schedule? Call us up. Let us know. 706-0111. Realistically, CD, I think there can only be three answers to this question. Which door are you going behind?
The door I'm going behind, Ben, I think it's definitely the easiest one of them all. It's Texas A&M. That's the non-Bama game that concerns you the concerns me the most, because it feels like what we're seeing from Jimbo Fisher the first couple games, being very competitive against a Clemson program. I think I can say right here, right now, that Texas A&M game concerns me, and I'm going to go more of a 1A type situation. The Florida game will concern me as well, especially it's going to be back at home. And you can about imagine Dan Mullen has seemingly had Coach O's number since being at Mississippi State and also now at Florida.
That's part of it, right? The way that Mullen continues to perform against Dave Aranda defenses, it's becoming one of the premier chess matches from a coaching standpoint in the SEC. So I'm with you on that. I'm not with you on Texas A&M. In fact, for me, that might be third in line, because the reality is this. The end of LSU season every year in November is always more about what just happened against Alabama and what's still possible, what's in front of you. I'll admit this, that was a bigger problem under Miles than it seems to be now under Ogeron. His teams have lost the Bama game every time out, and yet they don't necessarily falter down the stretch. But I think if LSU takes care of business in Tuscaloosa, or even if they don't, and they're a 10-1 team coming into that ball game, I think the Tigers have the world to play for. I think they've got all the motivation in the world coming off of 7 OTs last year. And so for me, I think that's third in line. Most concerning, that ain't Bama. because I'm looking at the two games in October, Florida and Auburn. Out of those two, I'll pick Florida, and I've got some method behind the madness. We continue to see incredibly close ball games between these two. I'm serious. You go up and down the line, and you got to go for a while to find one of these games that wasn't decided by 8 points or fewer. It was an 8-point game last year. LSU won. I'm sorry, scratch that. Now I'm playing like Cousin Dino, teasing you. No, Florida won that game, obviously, a year ago, 27-19 in Gainesville. It was 17-16 the year before LSU. 6-point game in 2016. 7-point game the year before. 7 the year before. I mean, seriously, you got to go back to 2013 to find a time that this wasn't a one-score game. LSU-Florida, seemingly always close. Doesn't matter where it is. Aranda v. Mullen, to your point, I think the answer is Florida, me personally. You start to get past that, I think you really stack chips, build steam, and you got to be feeling pretty good and likely a top two or three team in the country as well. All right, we'll take a trip out now to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Ron, you are up first.
Thanks for taking the call, Ben. Yeah, I'm with the previous caller. I'm kind of leaning toward A&M because I always thought when A&M came in the lead, and they have got up to speed at SEC caliber of players, that they would be a big old threat to LSU, you know, as far as recruiting, where they're located. And I'm always concerned about A&M, you know. So I have to go with your previous caller on this one, man.
That's fair. Ron, you know, we appreciate you. And
okay,
Clint, before you got it. And before we take the next one, Clint, I'm pretty sure that you are now the previous caller.
That's a new one, Ben. That is a new level right there, having somebody calling me the previous caller. It is what it is, though. I'll take it.
You call it a new level. I'll call it a new low. Not for Ron, but for you. All right, another trip out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Chad, thanks for waiting in line. The toughest non-Bama game on the schedule.
Ben, I think we run Florida bad, man, just because of Frank's big mouth, and I think we beat him by double digits. The game that scares me the most is probably the A&M game, because I think at that time, we're going to have so much on the line, maybe a playoff burst. And what way for Jimbo to come back to Tiger Stadium and to spoil that for the Tigers, man. Later.
That's fair. Clint, maybe it's a new low for me. Everybody agrees with you right now. That is either very dangerous or maybe I haven't caught up to speed and I haven't seen the light that you all have seen.
Well, I mean, tomorrow is Friday the 13th, so some strange things might be happening over the next couple days.
Some strange things happening right now. But certainly, I think it could get to be Freaky Friday territory. We got time for more. 706-0111, striking up a debate. Just something we do. Love to turn this show, every opportunity I get, into an open forum, a lively sports bar, sports chat. And ironically, well, I'm at the Taproom River Ranch right now. Pretty darn good crowd. 20, 25-plus people at 4:25 in the afternoon. You got to love Lafayette, baby. The weekend's starting early. And we're starting our conversation early. All we can do is look forward. Why? LSU, Northwestern State, a game that's supposed to be so lopsided, it's not even bettable. Off the board. Cajuns taking on Texas Southern. 44-point favorites. How can we not look toward the future? And still wondering what the toughest non-Bama game is on the schedule. Nobody, Clint, if I'm going behind door number one and picking the Florida Gators, and you're behind door number three taking the new rival, Texas A&M Aggies, nobody going yet, peeking behind door number two. Nobody's worried about the Tiger / War Eagle / Plainsman. And let's say this, part of the reason may be that it is a two-by-week season. In seasons past, well, that would be your eighth straight game before your bye week, and then you get Bama. At least this time out, you get some time to breathe. We'll go back out to the ARDCO Equipment Hotline. Chuck, welcome to the show. The floor is yours.
Hey, Ben. Okay, so we're talking about these games, but we are talking about old LSU teams that ran the ball, had to score on defense. This is a totally different team. Do you really think any of those games are going to be 8-point games or 3-point games? I see him scoring way more points than I don't see any of those games being close.
I do, and I'll tell you why, but that's a great point. Chuck, thanks for the dial.
Thank you, sir.
So I thought Chuck was about to go down a different road. His call got me thinking, and I thought he was about to say, old LSU teams, protected leads, old LSU teams flopped down the stretch if they lost to Bama and had no titles to play for. I thought that's where he was going. But he's going strictly with the thought that, hey, the offense is so good they'll run away from everybody. Well, they didn't exactly run away from Texas. And I think there's a chance that some of these SEC teams can pack a similar, if not a more devastating punch. I'm not saying any of them have a quarterback like Sam Ellinger. That kid earned all of my respect and more on Saturday. I mean, all of it. But I think that there are more well-rounded teams in the SEC. Once you see that Florida and Auburn D-line, I think that pass rush on Burrow may change the equation a little bit. Does it mean LSU won't win those games? No. They absolutely could and probably should win all of them, if not most of them. But are they going to be blowouts? That might be a little much to expect in the rough and tumble SEC. We'll keep talking about it next. You're dialed into Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back to the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
The Tigers, challengers, not just in the SEC, but certainly looks like on a national scale. Just wondering what might be able to trip them up, or I guess which games you have the most concern over. We're already starting to get some feedback that's pouring in. We've gotten a couple of calls over the air. We've got some on Twitter. But let's start on Facebook as we do the social media response. Russ R., Auburn, and A&M. My dude, that's just double dipping right there. All right? I didn't know we could do that, but I like it because I do think that those are two of the three absolute toughest. Jonathan F. responds on Twitter that it's Auburn. So how about it, Clint? You, Ron, Chad, everybody calling up on Texas A&M, your boys on Florida, most, if not all, of the online response so far says Auburn. So I think we all agree that there are three doors, one, two, and three, and, well, we're taking a peek behind all of them right now.
We definitely are. I'm kind of surprised at seeing Auburn because, again, Auburn, every now and again, they seem to be a contender, but most years something just kind of happens. And the way they look to kind of start off that two-lane game last week doesn't give me a whole heck of a lot of faith in the way that Oregon game went with Bo Nix having to come up clutch to give him the win. I'm not necessarily sold on the Auburn Tigers being any good.
Well, look, knocking them for coming back and winning that Oregon game, not sure I'm willing to go there. Even if I told you in the broadcast earlier, and I'll second it now, I think it was more about Oregon giving it away. They still went into that place with a green quarterback and took it, right? And if LSU did that any other season but this one, I think we'd all be, well, you know, I don't know, E for excited. But right now what Joe Burrow's doing is blowing all that out of the water. So certainly it looks like a different level right now. But I'm not willing to bury Auburn just yet. And they've crawled into the top eight in large part because they did take down what at the time was a top 12 Oregon team, right? So, look, I can make a strong case that that's the second biggest W of the season. LSU, of course, owns the first and the biggest over Texas. But after that, I'd say that Auburn over Oregon looms pretty large. You'd be hard-pressed to find somebody, except maybe Clemson over A&M, that's had a bigger win to date. So we'll open the phone lines up to you. Biggest test left. I mean, they're only two games into the season, but out of the remaining 10, as we look forward, what's the toughest and most difficult challenge for Ed Orgeron and the Tigers? 706-0111. The other thing on all of our minds this week, looking forward, it's the Saints and the Rams. And it's getting to be about that time where the Saints are going to travel out west. I think everybody in the media, all the fans are going to talk revenge. But I continue to think, and I know Luke Johnson has an interesting report that's up, that at least publicly the Saints players, that's not their MO. It's not what's on their mind. We're going to find out. As far as injuries are concerned, yesterday's official team participation report lists that they were without the following. Mario Edwards and, of course, Sheldon Rankins along the defensive line. Craig Robertson at linebacker. Marcus Williams at safety, and Ted Ginn Jr. did not practice with an illness. That isn't exactly what you want to hear. For what it's worth, on the other side of the ledger, the L.A. Rams, safety Eric Weddle, dealing with a concussion, did not practice. Former LSU Tiger Michael Brockers didn't practice with a shoulder injury along the D-line. And the Claymaker, it's weird to think of him wearing any uniform but a Green Bay Packers jersey. But linebacker Clay Matthews didn't practice dealing with a back injury. So these two teams come in and, by and large, healthy. But it's a guy that wasn't listed on that report for the Rams that I think makes all the difference in the world, Todd Gurley. And even though his head coach is saying he's fine, even though Sean Payton this week has been credited as saying they expect him to be a full go, that's not what they showed in the opener. And I don't know that they have just reason or cause to change that for a week two game. Just because it's the Saints, just because it's a rematch of the NFC title game, I mean, to borrow from Jim Morris Sr., you think that means diddly-poo to a team that accomplished what the Rams did last year? I think they're looking big picture. I think they realize Gurley ran out of gas down the stretch last year, and they're saving his sea legs. So I expect that there's a real good chance that Gurley receives less than, say, 60, 65% of the overall RB snaps in this ballgame Sunday afternoon. I think LSU, listen to me, I think the Saints are going to see a steady flow of some of the other guys. So how does that affect things? I think a ton. You still have to account for Gurley, but if he's not playing 80% of the snaps, certainly that helps. And so I told you yesterday with Cousin Dino and Spreadheads, I like Houdat Nation, and I like the chances of that franchise traveling out west and getting the first of two games against the Rams and against the Seahawks. So we open up primarily with LSU. We touch on a little Saints. After this break, we're going to go all in on SEC football. Lynn Scarborough, Lindy's Magazine, coming with us. Hey, we got to carve out some time. My guy can gab, and I don't mean that as a jab. I love it. This dude knows SEC football. He likes talking it. I'm excited to have him back. We're hanging out today and every Thursday at the Tap Room River Ranch. After we're done tonight, you can come and watch Bucks, Panthers. Of course, nobody wants to listen to that. The good news is you don't have to. From 8 until 11, Eric Gautreaux laying down the sound with no cover charge. Live music tonight and every Thursday at the Tap Room River Ranch. We'll be right back in with Lynn Scarborough. So don't go anywhere. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back into the Tap Room River Ranch. It's time to talk some SEC football. We got the perfect man for that job. Let's go find him aboard the ARCO Equipment Hotline, Lynn Scarborough with Lindy's Magazine. You can read his work online as well, lindysports.com. Lynn, it's fantastic to be talking with you. How are you today?
Hey, Ben. Great. Always great to be talking with you. And interesting start to the season in the SEC, and, both positively for some teams and negatively for some teams. Kind of unusual, really, the way the season started.
Okay, outside looking in, LSU start, the way Joe Burrow has performed, and that win at Texas, how do you view it?
Well, I'm on his bandwagon. I was on a couple of shows yesterday asking that question and asking if I thought it was premature for him to already be mentioned in the Heisman. Well, maybe. I mean, two games into the season. But right now, based on what he's done and the opposition that he did it against, going to Texas and having that kind of ball game, who's going to make a better case than him right now? Now, I think it's too early to put him in among the front runners, but, who knows? I mean, that was a heck of a performance. And, it's not like he's playing against nobody. I mean, I've been in the press box at Austin and on the sideline at Austin and in the stands at Austin for ball games. That's a tough place to play. It's a tough place to win. And the way LSU handled themselves, not just Burrow, but, I mean, obviously when you've got 400 and whatever yards passing and three touchdowns and rushing yardage and all that stuff, it's going to, you know, he's going to be the guy that's gotten the focus. But it's not just him. I mean, it was overall team effort. Still some significant games to play, but right now I'm buying that. And really, from the SEC standpoint overall, Ben, you got five SEC teams in the top nine. I was looking at the AP poll this morning. You had Alabama 2, Georgia 3, LSU was either 4 or 5, Auburn's 8, and Florida's 9. And, I know a lot of the teams are having rough starts to the year, but when you've got five out of the top nine from the SEC and the AP poll, that's pretty strong.
We talked preseason on this program, Lynn, and I think you agreed that it would be maybe LSU, Auburn, or A&M that had the best chance to challenge Bama. Let's take LSU out of this equation. Of those other two, what do you make of Auburn coming from behind to beat Oregon? A&M loses to Clemson. There's usually not a lot of shame in that. How do you size those two up?
Well, I think they're pretty even teams, to be honest with you. We've got our radio network, which we're honored to be on your station with our radio network. We also have some affiliates in Oregon. And I was on one of the affiliates in Oregon after the Auburn-Oregon game. And they were saying, well, Oregon people are really down because they felt like they had the weight of the Pac-12 on them. And it's the second year in a row that the best team in the Pac-12 played Auburn at the start of the year, and Auburn beat them both times, blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, you don't need to be down on Oregon. I said, because Oregon lost to a really good team. It's not like they were Tennessee losing to Georgia State. And I said, Oregon's going to turn it around. Well, they did. The next week they played Nevada, who had just beaten Purdue of the Big Ten, and Oregon beat Nevada like 70-some to 6. So there's no disgrace in that. There's no disgrace in losing to Clemson. I think you've been up there, and I've covered games up there as well. Another tough place to play. And it's not like they got beat 70-6. They got beat 24-10. And that's Clemson may be the best team in the country. And that's a respectable showing there. So I don't think A&M people or SEC people need to be down on A&M yet. I think it's too early to dismiss them. Auburn's very good. Lindy's had them rated the number one defensive line in the country, had their defensive backfield and offensive line both in the top 7 or 8 in the country. And their wide receivers are solid, but they've got the freshman quarterback, same as a number of other schools. And right now, you've got to lean toward teams with veteran, returning, talented junior, senior quarterbacks. And A&M has that, when Kellen Mond. And Auburn's never lost at College Station. Since A&M came into the game, they did beat Auburn once at Auburn, but they've never beaten them at College Station. They might have beaten Auburn twice at Auburn, and they've never beaten them at College Station. So that's not going to go on forever. Eventually, Texas A&M's going to beat them at home. So if I were saying right now, I would probably have a slight lean toward Texas A&M, but that's not to put down Auburn at all. Auburn's played better than A&M, but A&M's done well, and I think having the home field advantage and having the veteran quarterback probably leans me to lean a little bit toward Texas A&M.
Enjoying our conversation with Lynn Scarborough with Lindy's Magazine on 103.7 The Game. We scamper, Lynn, over to the SEC East. Florida, I think, always was going to go as far as Felipe Franks could take them.
Yep.
I think some of the immaturity concerns are probably still there, but they've won football games. They're the number 9 team in the AP poll. Are you a believer in their chances to keep improving under Dan Mullen in year 2 and possibly challenge Georgia?
Well, they could. They certainly could. Dan Mullen's got a great track record with quarterbacks. Everybody knows that. So if anybody's going to have the track record that could continue to make Felipe Franks better, it would probably be Dan Mullen. I'm not sold on Florida. I'm certainly not sold on Miami, and Miami was not a very impressive team against Florida. And then you think, well, they'll show up and do well the next week. They lost to North Carolina, who nobody had picked very high to start with, and won like 2 games last year. Mack Brown is one of the great stories in college football so far this year. He knocks off South Carolina as an underdog, and he knocks off Miami. We actually had the winning catch for North Carolina as our national catch of the week this week in Lindy's football newsletter. So I'm not that impressed with Florida, but Kentucky's got we talked before the season started about the quarterback situation in the SEC, and it's an unusual year in that. And one reason is because of this transfer portal thing and graduate transfer thing. You've got a lot of teams this year that have a really solid, talented, highly rated, experienced quarterback. But you got a lot of SEC quarterbacks that were on SEC teams that are playing at other places now, so that they would be the backups, so that you're in a situation that if they had an injury, then they had a significant drop down. in talent, maybe skill level, certainly experience. Well, this has already happened to two teams. Florida plays one of them on Saturday. Terry Wilson, not that he's Tua or Jake Fromm, but he's solid. You know, he was the primary quarterback last year for them to win double digits in ball games, and I think beat Penn State in a bowl. So that's solid. And he goes down, and all of a sudden they got to bring in a guy that doesn't have any experience. The reason they do, Ben, is because Gunnar Hoke, who was going to be the backup quarterback there, highly rated guy coming out of high school, he entered the transfer portal and went to Ohio State. You know, thinking that he might come in and replace Barrett. Well, Tate Martell transfers, and then he's not playing. Well, he transfers from Kentucky, and Justin Fields transfers from Georgia. So now Gunnar Hoke is the backup to Justin Fields. If he'd stayed at Kentucky, he'd probably be the starting quarterback against Florida Saturday. And because they don't have Wilson, I think their chances to knock off Florida are diminished. Same as I think with South Carolina and Alabama. Last time Alabama played at South Carolina, they went in undefeated, number one in the country. South Carolina already had one loss. They'd lost to Auburn that year. They've lost to North Carolina this year. And they had a quarterback, Stephen Garcia, who was inconsistent, but he had a great game against them. Jake Bentley is the all-time guy for South Carolina. He's played in more games. He's had more yards, been responsible for more touchdowns. And he's from the state of Alabama. So nothing would probably thrill him more than to knock off Alabama. In his last season, well, he gets hurt. And Helinski comes in, and he didn't do bad last week. I mean, they're playing like Charleston Southern, so you can't really tell. But so instead of having their senior, one of their best quarterbacks ever, go up against Alabama, they now, because of the injury and not having the backup, are going with a guy that doesn't have any experience. And so you gotta strongly take Alabama, which you'd take them if Jake Bentley was playing. But you give them a better chance to knock Alabama off, just like you give Kentucky a better chance to knock Florida off. So I'm not sold on Florida yet, but I'm pretty sold that Florida will win the game on Saturday.
Lynn, how much tolerance will there be in Knoxville for this Tennessee coaching staff to try and get things right?
Well, I mean, they're getting real tired of it. And Jeremy Pruitt has the disadvantage of having followed the other four or five coaches that have been there in the last, you know, 12 years and not succeeded. There's a generation, you know, you and I, when we think of the power teams in the SEC, the traditional power teams in the SEC, we think about Alabama and LSU and Georgia and Auburn and Tennessee. But these guys that are freshmen at Tennessee right now, they don't remember a time that Tennessee was a competitive relative team in the national championship picture. You've had, you know, LSU's been in it two or three times. Florida's been in it three times. Auburn's been in it two or three times. Alabama's been in it about six times. But Tennessee hadn't been in it. And has Tennessee played in more than one? I know they played in one SEC championship game since 2000, maybe two. They didn't win either one of them if it was two. I know they lost one. And Tennessee people, you know, that first ball game, Ben, if I read it right, they had 20,000 empty seats. And if you got 20,000 empty seats at $50 a ticket, that's, you know, my math's not great, but isn't that $1 million? I mean, that's a lot of money. And how long can they take that? They'll beat Chattanooga this weekend. I mean, you think, after the Georgia State game, who knows? But then, you know, they've got Florida and Georgia and Mississippi State, and Mississippi State's not a great team. They play them at home, so they might win that. But it's going to be tough. They got the advantage. They don't play LSU, Auburn, or Texas A&M. We mentioned those three teams as being probably the best other three in the West. They do get the advantage of not playing them. And you would have said before the year, oh, they get the advantage. They don't play a major Power 5 opponent. They play Brigham Young. Well, that didn't go well. So I don't know. You know, if they're going down the stretch and they got to win six games, go to bowl, and they're going against Kentucky and they're going against Vanderbilt, Kentucky, you know, has beaten them a couple of times when they went a long time. Vanderbilt's beaten them, what, three out of the last 4 years? And, you know, I don't know. You know, your patience can only go so long, but then their patience only went so long with the other four guys they fired and having to pay your money to after they're gone. So it's not a real good situation in Knoxville right now.
Very trying times in Rocky Top. Lynn, this always is fun. Thanks for taking time out today to visit with us. Look forward to doing it again soon.
Okay, Ben. Let me know anytime. Always glad to be on with you.
Love it. That's Lynn Scarborough. Lindy's Magazine online, lindysports.com. And, you know, a huge story that's been making the rounds on social media for good reason, the story about the young Tennessee fan, I believe he lives in the state of Florida, who was being bullied for kind of his homemade UT Tennessee shirts. And now Tennessee is licensing the sale of those shirts. I believe they also have endowed a scholarship for the young man to come to Tennessee. Hey, that's the good stuff, and that's really cool stuff. And I hate to use that as a jumping-off point on the sad truth for their football program, but right now they're getting bullied around, and another Saban disciple got a job. We're going to see if Jeremy Pruitt's able to do anything about it. That in Arkansas, I continue to tell you, and I drill this home for you for a reason. Those are the two toughest recruiting jobs in the SEC for places that are expected to win. Vandy's different. Kentucky's different. Tennessee, Arkansas, they don't have the natural resources in state. They have to leave the state, and it's tough for them. All right, CD, we're winding down hour number one. Let's do it in style with one final word.
What's up, Katie Anna? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Young, and I saw this earlier today, and it made my head spin. Andrew Luck is 30 years young today. Incredible. He's retired. Rob Gronkowski, sub-30, retired as well. It's a new era, and these guys are taking care of their life after football, and a lot of them increasingly are doing it young. That's the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming right back with Gordy Rush talking LSU football. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Now we're 2 of 3 underway. I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game. Each and every Thursday, my pleasure to join you and broadcast from the Tap Room River Ranch. Meanwhile, the famous Clint D, he's with us in spirit. And also from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Paging Gordy Rush, and with any luck, we'll have him aboard here in the next few moments to talk some LSU football. He was field level, as he is each and every week, sideline reporter for the LSU Sports Radio Network. Other than hot as the Dickens, I'm curious what that front row seat was like for Gordy inside of the friendly confines in Austin. So we'll see if we can't get him aboard, and I also want to look forward with him. Tigers will be without, we know, Rashard Lawrence, Glenn Logan along the defensive line. Kalavon Chaisaw listed as questionable by Coach O last night at his weekly coaches show. What else do we know about the next men up for LSU's front seven? And hopefully it's not just a one game situation where they're going through this going up against Northwestern State. They don't have to bring some of that to Vandy, but in either case, Tigers have two more. They get out of September, and then they head into their first of two bye weeks in 2019. So again, we'll do our best to connect you with Gordy Rush later in this segment. One thing I can tell you, shouldn't have much of a problem with our next couple of guests, because they're scheduled to come live to the Tap Room River Ranch. In about 25 minutes, Todd Russ, our man's making it up from the Barry, to sit in live with me. Huge event that's coming up, not this Saturday, but next. September 21, it is the Southwest Regional Coaches Clinic. And so we got a lot to touch on there. You love prep hoops. You love area basketball. Well, these guys and gals, they do as well. And so we're going to discuss kind of a first-of-its-kind event, if you will, that's coming to the area. Again, Todd Russ sitting in live at 5:30. Also, sitting across from me at the table I'm occupying at the Taproom River Ranch, Blaine Viator, 6 to 6:30. We stay preppy, but we go to the football side. And we've got some good topics earmarked for that one. Our top five teams in Acadiana best week two games, as well as one team that surprised and one that underwhelmed a little bit from the opening week. And so stay tuned for that coming up later in the program. But right now, it is our pleasure to head across the basin aboard the ARCO Equipment Hotline, Gordy Rush, LSU football sideline reporter. G-Man, how you doing today?
Hey, Ben, how are you?
Hey, life is good here. Tell me about just how it was. I know it was incredibly hot, but your field-level look at the LSU-Texas game.
You know, Ben, it was an incredible football game. I thought that both teams played well, right? It was a shootout. It was an incredible atmosphere. And, you know, what can you say about Joe Burrow and the LSU offense? I mean, for them to come out the first two games and execute a new offense, that sort of efficiency, you know, it's been the story, and rightfully so. But it was a great football game.
I would say this. Sam Ellinger showed me a lot. I kind of had him pegged as more of a running quarterback that could throw when he needed to. He was electric in that ball game, and I know he's garnered a lot of respect from you. So some of the things that you witnessed from the opposite quarterback Saturday night.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, so I actually went and, you know, I went and shook that guy's hand after the game. I usually don't go, you know, some coaches I know or something like that, but rarely players. And, you know, I had read his story about his dad passing at a triathlon, I believe when he was 46 years old, and this kid, all he wanted to do was play for Texas. And Ben, you know, the effort, and he hung in there and just dealt with the adversity of the game. You know, he did everything possible. He had the running back try to pass for the pitch down. And, you know, his offensive line, you know, I thought that they didn't run the ball efficiently. I thought he played his heart out. I was really impressed.
We'll continue our talk with Gordy Rush, LSU football sideline reporter. Good enough to get with us on a Thursday on 103.7 The Game. Defensively, LSU we know is going to be without a couple of guys on the D-line. So who are some of the next men up that have an opportunity against the Demons?
Well, with me, Ben. You know, I think that – you there?
Yeah, we got you.
Ben, I think first off, I'm really interested to see Jacoby Stevens a little bit more on the edge, and then talk a little bit about Demone Clark coming off the edge. I don't – you know, Ed didn't hold any punches with the guys that we're going to miss. We know Lawrence and we know Logan both rolled ankles. And he mentioned Chasson. It just makes no sense to play Chasson in this game, in my opinion. So I'm really interested to see them play a little bit. More Stevens as an edge because you're going to play nickel and dime type packages because Brad Smiley, their offensive coordinator, is a spread the throw type of guy. I'm interested to see Cherry, one of the young linemen, play a little bit more of a role. I think that's going to be interesting to me. And Andre Anthony played a couple snaps in this game, in the last game. He's shown some flashes during fall camp. Can he come off the edge? And one more name is Marcel Brooks. Marcel went out. Brooks, who did not play in the opener, came in for a couple key plays. They've been really, really high on him. Those are just some of the names, I think, on the defensive front to look for this week.
What's the latest you could share on Apu Aika and their ability to, I guess their willingness rather, to put him in and rotate him with Shelvin?
Well, I think he's just been limited, you know, with what's been documented about his boot and his wearing a boot and his, you know, foot ankle issues. My question to you is, do you want him? Yeah, you'd like to get some reps in, but you need numbers and you need bodies to make this stretch run. And when I look at the way this schedule builds up, you're going to play Perth against Vanderbilt next week, which, you know, you'll be a 2-3 touchdown favorite over Vanderbilt. Then you get an open week. Then you get Utah State. If I'm at Arizona, I'm Jack Marucci, and I'm managing this roster, and I'm going forward trying to manage this roster to make sure I'm as healthy as possible for Florida, but I want to give people an ample chance to get healthy, especially the nose guard position, because let's face it, you know, none of these teams, you're going to be playing more nickel and dime, as I mentioned, so you're going to have two defensive linemen a lot of times on the field. So how much consideration is that going to be brought in I need numbers to make this stretch run for the SEC? I feel really good about winning the next three football games.
I'm going to to fire away a special teams question at you, Gordy. I think LSU fans certainly maybe a bit spoiled by Cole Tracy a year ago. In the aftermath of that, is there a chance that we're underestimating how difficult it is to do what Cade York is doing as a freshman right away?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, to, you know, for him to go step on in that atmosphere on artificial turf, you know, his home state, and kicked, was perfect on field goals, no question. I mean, LSU has been spoiled. And you know, that's what it, when people ask me about Cade York, I said, look, he's a freshman. You know, they're going to be some bumps in the road. You know, hopefully there's less than your average freshman. So far, so good.
What would you say that, I guess, the usage of Joe Burrow ideally looks like, given the fact that he's been nicked up a little bit, an opponent like Northwestern State? How deep do you think they allow him to go, depending on the score?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question, Ben. You know, he's playing in the Heisman conversation, right? And so, you know that's good for a program. Look how much press they've gotten. It helps in recruiting, on and on and on. Northwestern State just lost to Midwestern State. I had to Google them, by the way, to figure out where the Fighting Mustangs were from. How much do I let him go a little bit extra to put some stats out there? Do I let him throw the ball when I'd like to see these freshman running backs, execute a little bit more, knowing that I've got to run the ball a little bit more efficiently when I get into the SEC versus what I did against Texas? I think that's just some interesting questions. We'll see how it plays out.
I'll get you out of here, Gordy, with an SEC-wide question. Take LSU, Georgia, Bama out of the equation. Who's impressed you so far in the SEC?
Well, you know, I want to see some more of Auburn. I think two teams. I want to see some more of Auburn with Bo Nix. I know they didn't light it up against Tulane offensively last week. And then I still want to see more of Texas A&M. And obviously that was a tough ask for them to go on the road and win at Clemson. So those are the two teams that I have my eye on. Florida, I still have a lot of questions about Florida, especially on that offensive line after that Miami game.
Always good to catch up. Gordy, I know you're busy, man. Thanks for doing this.
Anytime. Take care, Ben.
That's Gordy Rush. You can follow him, and you should, on Twitter, at GLRush3, the number not spelled out. And I think for a game that has as few storylines as LSU Northwestern State, I get the fact that Ogeron's got connections there, but outside of it, maybe the biggest we have, I think it's twofold, right? Rashard Lawrence, Glenn Logan out with rolled ankles. Okay, who steps up along the D-line? Apu Aika, as you just heard from Gordy, still dealing with his own injury trials and tribulations. So they're thin on the D-line. Opportunities for some of the young guys, especially with this relaxed redshirt rule, to maybe get in and play for two, perhaps three quarters in this ball game, or portions of it at least. Outside of that, I'd point toward Joe Burrow. And if it's the Nick Saban school of thought, hey, just win and get your guy out of there. I mean, Tua Tagovailoa was not in the Heisman conversation last year. He was dominating it for about 9 or 10 weeks. But do you think that they played that guy just to get him stats? No. He didn't play in the fourth quarter until, I think, the LSU game in November. So that will be very interesting. How does Joe Burrow, what type of treatment does he receive from the coaching staff? I don't get the sense that these guys are stats and analytic driven when it comes to awards. Not even a little bit. I think they want to get back on top. I think they want their guy healthy, especially for the stretch run. So my guess, I don't think Burrow plays very much past halftime. They've got one guy we know in Miles Brennan they want to get out there. But I would think, me personally, I would see this as an opportunity to at least let Peter Parrish get out there under the lights of Tiger Stadium. He may not play in another game this year, but he could still do it and take a red shirt. Why not? That would be the way I look at it. But I don't get paid $4 million to do it. I get to come here to the Tap Room River Ranch, and I'm good enough with that. We got another hour and 45 minutes to go. Todd Russ going to join us in about 15 minutes, and then Blaine Viator at 6 o'clock. First prep basketball, then prep football. We wouldn't want it any other way. On the other side of this break, time to throw a little bit of shade in Alabama. When you know it, the Crimson Tide are going to creep into that conversation as well. So stick with us, and we'll be right back out to the Tap Room. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. and we're live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
A shade over 19 minutes past 5 o'clock. A couple of great conversations in a row. Lynn Scarborough, SEC football, and then Gordy Rush focused in on LSU. Got a few more great ones coming. Todd Russ coming up from the Barry to talk about the Southwest Regional Coaches Clinic. We'll do that in about 11 or 12 minutes, and then Blaine Viator at 6 o'clock. Between now and then, we'd love to hear from you. 706-0111. Anybody scare you in the SEC that's not Bama or Georgia? I don't know at this point. And the top 10 of the AP would tell you that you have to respect Auburn at number 8, Florida at number 9. A&M doesn't drop too much, right, after losing to the number one team in the country a week ago. And I guess from there, we're going to have to play the wait-and-see game. The most intriguing SEC game of the week, definitely Florida at Kentucky. And that definitely means you've got a weak slate. And so a lot of teams stepping out of conference action. But number 9, Florida at Kentucky, about an 8.5-point favorite. And I told Cousin Dino yesterday, you can give me Kentucky in that one. I like their chances, certainly. With the line that big, just not buying in on Felipe Franks, not yet at least. And at this point in his career, maybe not ever. Pretty good segue, CD, for me to remind you that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com, check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. You can also trust management top-down. It starts with Mark. They're going to sit down with you, create a vision, and they can fulfill it before the Saints go marching in toward the Super Bowl in January and into February. They're ready to up your patio game, but you better hurry to the website, patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
Clint, you and I could get a bit interactive here because this is one of those where I'm throwing shade with a question mark at the end. I'm wondering what you think about this. I'll give you my two cents. A report came out today that Alabama is set to keep track of its students at football games inside Bryant-Denny Stadium. This is literally Big Brother type stuff. They're going to monitor. They're going to literally track if these students that come into the game are staying in the game and if they're still there in the fourth quarter. Now, they're not just going to monitor it. You could say they're going to monetize it or at least incentivize these students. How are they going to do that, you'd ask? Playoff tickets are on the line. And so Alabama, which virtually has a birthright to play in the college football playoff at this point, they're going to play Big Brother with their students, tracking their barcodes on the tickets, and the ones that stay to and through the fourth quarter have the best chance of being at the front of the line for college football playoff tickets. So I'll let you weigh in here, CD. Is that fair or foul for you? You throwing shade, or is this just good business from Bama?
Well, I definitely would throw shade at it because it just seems entirely too shady because I feel like you brought it up perfectly. It is a Big Brother type situation where you're keeping track of the fans and if they stay. Here's the thing. I agree. It's a good idea, but it seems just very shady that you're going to have your mobile app keep track of you every move that you wind up making throughout the evening or the afternoon in the case of some of the games that they have, obviously, at 11 a.m. next week. It reeks of Big Brother type stuff, and I'm not a fan of it.
It's kind of hard for me to get in line with it as well. And, again, I understand the intentions behind it, but the methods to the madness, I don't know that the ends justify the means here. So, yeah, I think we're in lockstep. And, hey, even if we weren't, tie goes to the runner. We're in South Louisiana. Nobody likes Bama, so we'll lean on them a little bit. They're rolling tide. We're rolling over on them with this one. Stop tracking the kids. Let them enjoy the games. And if you're blowing out little sister of the poor state, it's okay if they leave to go get a hot toddy in the third quarter, Coach.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PetioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
This much I know, CD, if that policy were in place when yours truly was roaming the library halls, why don't we call them those? Yeah. At the University of Georgia in Athens, there's no chance that I would have been granted playoff tickets, BCS tickets, I mean bowl game tickets. If Georgia was housing somebody, I was going in the fourth quarter. Say something about me? I don't know. Maybe it does. But I'm telling you, when it's hot as the bejesus in an SEC football stadium, I'm not going to fault some of these kids for taking off. And if that means they don't get college football playoff tickets, well, then they'll probably try to get mommy or daddy to buy them. If that won't happen, they'll do what everybody else in the country does and watch the game on TV. So I'd like to tell you that this storyline surprised me when I first saw it earlier today. Sadly, Clint, it did not.
And about the same for me. It just does not surprise me at all. I mean, you brought it up perfectly, the fact that you're going to be – you was a college student at Georgia, and they could have been a contender for the college football playoff back when that was going on. There's no way you would have been staying for the fourth quarter when they were taking on, let's say, Georgia State or Georgia Southern or a team along that line.
So, okay, let's play this game. LSU's got that type of ball game this Saturday night. And it's no disrespect to Northwestern State, but even at the level of football they're playing, they're struggling right now, right? We keep having guests come aboard and say they lost to Midwestern State last week. People have to look up where that is, small town in Texas. But here's the thing. If anybody has earned their fan base's support around the country through two games, certainly I think LSU has. And I bet there's going to be a large crowd when that game starts. But where would you even set an over-under for the number of students that are still in Death Valley Saturday night when the fourth quarter starts? I don't know, 1,500, 1,200, 1,000? Where would you even set that over-under?
I think 1,000 would be a good over-under, mind you. I'd pound that under like it's no tomorrow because I would not be surprised if there's probably, let's say, 600 to 700. And then if we're going to count pizza boxes, let's go with them 550 because you saw those pizza boxes that were getting stacked towards the end of that LSU game. It's going to get ridiculous at one point.
That's a pretty good reference there. And I'll remind you of this before we head toward our midway point of the 5 o'clock hour break. Yes, there is now beer in Tiger Stadium, but look, I mean, they're 19, 20, 20. Okay, I'm sorry. Underage kids don't drink. They're 21, 22-year-old kids. There may be beer in Tiger Stadium, Glenn, but there's not beer pong in Tiger Stadium. So there's only so much you could do.
And I have to agree with you, Ben. I think that's definitely would be the greatest thing of all time, to have beer pong at any college football stadium inside of it. That would entice some fans to stay for the entire four quarters.
We might have just come up with an idea that warrants royalties, and I'll certainly look into that after the show is over. All right, enough of monkeying around. We got some important topics abounding for the remainder of the program. Todd Russ going to join us to talk Southwest Regional Coaches Clinic on the other side of this break. And then we got to get to the recently announced Ragin' Cajun Athletics Hall of Famers, Ike Taylor, the big name among that list. But I'll share the rest with you at the end of this hour, and then Blaine Viator at straight up 6 o'clock. So stick with us. We're coming right back out to the Tap Room River Ranch. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we're always live on 103.7 The Game.
Ian Eagle here from Thursday Night Football on Westwood One. Tony Baselli and I will get Week 2 started with NFC South action. Jameis Winston and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers travel to Charlotte to face Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers. Which team will claim their first division win? Join us to find out and hear the NFL all season from Westwood One.
On Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Another reminder that the free 103.7 The Game mobile app, it's the best way to connect with Acadiana Sports Station and take us with you on the go. So make sure you go to your mobile app and your app store and then search KLWB 103.7 The Game. You can plug into live and local shows, get on-demand interviews, specialty podcasts, then get involved with our Rewards Club. It's an opportunity to enter to win all kind of goodies, even trips to see the Houston Astros. That free mobile app, it's proudly presented by Visit Avery Island.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
Still hanging out and having a blast at the Taproom River Ranch. First of two guests with me now that's smart enough to come out here and do a live interview, because when I'm here on Thursday, it's just the way to be. Todd Russ is with us, head basketball coach for the New Iberia Senior High Yellow Jackets and the All-Acadian Area Coach of the Year in 2016. Coach, great to have you here.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure, and the reason for our discussion is coming up not this Saturday but next, September the 21st, an all-day event that area coaches need to know about. It's the Southwest Regional Coaches Clinic. I'll let you give a bit of an outline and describe it for our listeners.
Yes, this is our inaugural coaches clinic, and we're excited. We feel like we have a great group of coaches coming in and speak on a variety of topics. Not that, you know, we there was such a large group we could have picked from. Very hard decision. But we feel like we have a quality group coming in. We have Tony Clark from Thibodaux High this past year's 5A state champion. We have Corey Orner, who's from Walker. So we reached out to different areas, not just locally, but just the Southwest region. We have a local coach in Chris Kovach, who won state in 4A back in 2018. Deacon Jones, assistant coach at the UL Navy Raging Cajuns, is going to be participating. And we got an assistant coming over from LSU. So exciting day. Really looking forward to coaches coming in. And again, this is not just for high school coaches, but area coaches, rec league coaches, middle school, junior high. So just trying to grow the game in the area, man.
And so there's an opportunity for coaches to come and sponge from other coaches. And, you know, it's funny because sometimes you think about trade secrets and the things that you want to protect. This is the opposite of that way of thinking. I mean, this is sharing in not necessarily what you're doing in a 2-3 zone or what you're doing off the pick and roll. This is how to get the best out of the young men, the young women, and help mold them.
Yes, it's a way of developing and something that I think our area really needs. And as you mentioned, the trade seekers. So we're not expecting these coaches to come and give us everything that they have, but we are looking forward to them sharing their knowledge, and maybe you can pick up on a drill or two that you may not be doing, or a concept that you may not be doing, a concept you may not quite understand. And the other thing is, we're going to have players on the floor, so it's not just them going to be talking. We're going to have players from New Iberia High School, and also Coach Gilbo at Catholic High, where we're going to be hosting it at. He's going to have his players, so it's going to be very interactive with the players and the coaches, demonstrating and, you know, some live periods so you can see how certain concepts are put into play.
And I'm glad you mentioned that. The event is going to be held at Catholic of New Iberia, 8:15 a.m. Breakfast, you guys got it going. It's provided by Buck and Johnny's. It'll go through noon, or 12:30 actually, where lunch is provided by the Jambalaya Shop, and then it continues all the way until 5:45, and so it's amazing, all the different, I guess, bases that you're going to touch in between 8:15 and 5:45. And, again, there's an opportunity for coaches at all different levels, boys, girls, even travel ball.
Yes.
We talked about off air, to come and be a part of this.
Exactly. And again, we, you know, it's the Southwest Regional Coaches, and we don't want to just have you thinking, well, if I'm not a high school coach, is this for me? But, you know, middle school coaches, you get a chance to come see what some of the successful collegiate and high school coaches are doing at our level and the higher level, and travel ball coaches. You get to come and interact with some of the coaches that are going to be there to try to bridge that gap a little bit. And I think the biggest thing is, in this area, there's not anything like this being offered. Stroney and I are very excited to bring it to the community. We're hoping it's something that's going to grow, that we can build upon. And each year, you know, one of the big things, we're going to invite different coaches to do it. You know, it's going to be open to different coaches. We're going to find out who's interested in participating. And this year, in arguably, it's very difficult to narrow it down to five. We think we have a real quality group. And, again, we're looking forward to growing it.
And I'm glad you mentioned Stroney. Of course, you're talking about Stephen Stroney, head basketball coach of the St. Thomas More girls. And so only $40 per coach. You can email all your questions and then get involved, southwestregionalcoaches@gmail.com. We got a few more moments. Todd Russ coming up here from the Berry. Coach, glad you're here. This is a lot of fun. Give us a little bit of your background for the listeners that have seen you coaching, haven't heard from you before, but have been following the Yellow Jackets. I guess a bit of your journey. You're also on the football side with Coach Ware.
Yes, sir, I am. I am starting year 11 here at New Iberia Senior High, taking over the program back in 2009, and very excited. Spent some time on the collegiate level, Nicholls State, Centenary College, Texas Pan-American, and just excited about where my program is going. We hadn't reached our ultimate goal, which is cutting down the nets and celebrating the state championship, but we work every day diligently to try to reach that goal. And I am currently working with the new football coach at New Iberia Senior High, with Coach Ware, who is also in a rebuilding stage, something that I'm very, very familiar with, being that I took over a program that had hit some hard times, replacing great coaches. Rick Hudson, great coach, great friend of mine, and I'm just trying to assist Coach Ware any way I can on the football field. I'm not a football guru, not a basketball guru, but know a little bit more about basketball than football. So it's exciting times at New Iberia. We think we're going to put a product out on the basketball court that's going to be very competitive, something that we've been able to do the last couple of years. We have a great group of young men who are working very hard. So we're excited about the upcoming basketball season. Right now is football season, so we're excited about that as well, excited about the direction that Coach Ware is taking the football program. And so, you know, New Iberia Athletics is having some exciting times, man, just building and staying competitive.
So do this for me, Coach. Think about when you first got into this side of things, not playing but coaching, from where it was then with the coaches in the Southwest region, maybe to where it is now. I know that there's a long way to go. That's the reason for coaching clinics like this one. But I'm imagining you've still seen some growth.
Well, you know what? There's a lot of growth, man. We have some real quality coaches in the area. The game is changing. The athletes are changing. And it's fun to see coaches changing with the athletes, changing with the time. And not so much the catering to. And, you know, everybody used the term, is, you know, guys are soft and things of that nature. But I will say, man, guys are very, very athletic these days. The game is faster. Game is played above the rim. And I think what we're doing with the Southwest Regional Coaching Clinic is helping people bridge that gap, helping you see how a coach like Tony Clark and Chris Kovach, who've been coaching for years, how they're still able to adapt to today's game and, you know, help you continue to grow. And you're right, there is a lot of growth still left in the game, and a lot of things have changed. Again, players are more athletic, even on the female side. You know, and that's another thing about bring up about this coaching clinic. It's not just a boys' side. It's just not the guys. We're combining both the girls' side and the boys' side. And I think that's another thing that's going to make it great, because usually when you go to a coaching clinic, either you're going to all-girls coaches or all-guys coaches. Here we have two very successful high school boys' coaches. We have a very successful high school girl coach in Corey Arnold. And we're bringing in two collegiate assistants from the flagship schools in the state.
It's a big deal.
That's a pretty big deal. Kids, a guy coming in from LSU, a guy coming in from UL, two of the flagship programs in the state. And for $40, I don't know where you can get that kind of
And you get fed twice.
And you get fed twice. BSN is also helping out there. We're going to have some gifts. Some door prizes and things of that nature. So we're excited about our first year, man, and hoping that, again, it can continue to grow. We're reaching out to high school girls, high school boys, junior high. And junior high, I really, really wish we can get a lot of junior high coaches in, because that's where the biggest growth could take place. We get a lot of kids, and, again, they don't get to spend as much time with their athletes as we do on the high school level. But it could be a chance to see for them to see how high school coaches conduct a practice, how high school coaches conduct a drill. So, you know, our middle school coaches out there, junior high coaches out there, This is definitely a professional development time for you to come out and see some really good, successful coaches demonstrate what makes their program successful.
Coach Todd Russ is with us, and I don't know, Coach, if you guys and gals are smart, lucky, or both. I'm betting it's smart. But the Raging Cajuns are on the road that weekend. LSU is on the road that weekend. There's really no excuse.
There's really no excuse. Johnny, and then we're going to provide you some. Who doesn't like jambalaya in the South, man? Come on. And your favorite team's traveling. We'll be finishing time enough for you to catch them on television. It's a can't miss.
It's a beautiful thing.
Beautiful thing, and you're going to be disappointed if you don't show up because you're going to hear about it, and you're going to kick yourself that you didn't make it if you don't come through.
So coaches at all levels listening, the first annual Southwest Regional Coaches Clinic, not this Saturday, but next, September 21st, begins at 8:15, goes through 5:45. You get fed twice. It'll be at Catholic of New Iberia, $40 per coach. I know the email address that you can frequent there is southwestregionalcoaches@gmail.com. Any phone number, anything else you want to put out?
You know, you can, if you want to reach me or Stephen Strongy, I'm going to give you our information here over the air. My number, Coach Russ, New Iberia High School, is area code 337-967-3180. Once again, that's 337-967-3180. And Strongy, you're going to be a little upset, but I'm going to put your number out anyway. Okay.
He would probably appreciate this.
He won't mind. Stephen, it's 337-278-9068. 337-278-9068. Feel free to give either one of us a call if you have any questions, concerns, just want to know a little bit more about what we're doing, want to get involved. Just reach out, and we're looking forward to putting on a great clinic.
Coach, it's been a pleasure. I appreciate you coming out.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate you having us.
We'll hit our final break of the hour. Coming right back, I want to tell you about the newest members of the Raging Cajuns Athletic Hall of Fame. So stick with us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be right back out to a packed Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Raymond Parks III here, host of RP3 and Company, reminding you to tune in 6 to 9 on Friday as we will.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Here, there, and everywhere. That's just kind of how we do it, especially on these Tap Room Thursdays. That was a lot of fun. Great to have Todd Russ come up from the Yellow Jackets. Yes, Nish, and talking about the Southwest Regional Coaches Clinic. But, CD, I teased this, and I know that you've been a little curious. Maybe I just got the email before you, which would be a first ever for me to find something online before you did. But earlier this afternoon, the Raging Cajuns announced that they're ready to unveil their 2019 Athletics Hall of Fame class. I'll give you the names, but know this. This group is going to be recognized during halftime of the Cajuns Texas State home conference game on November the 2nd. Here are the seven former Raging Cajun student-athletes, CD. The headliner, certainly, is Ike Taylor, longtime Pittsburgh Steeler, guy that owns a couple of rings. And, CD, I had no idea. If you knew this, and be honest with me, if you Google this, I'm going to slap you upside the head. I'm going to drive over to the 237 Roof Studios and do that. Did you know that his real first name was Ivan?
It's something that I definitely remember from back in the day whenever you're just looking at the game day programs and you see Ivan, Ike Taylor. I remember that being a thing that was in some of the game day programs back in the Gap.
All right, fair enough. All right, look, respect to you, because I had no idea that was that man's first name. But Ivan Ike Taylor, hats off to you. You're going into the Raging Cajuns Athletics Hall of Fame, as are Stephanie DeFeo for softball, Kathy Morton also for softball, Priscilla Lima, volleyball, Jose Alvarez, baseball. And how about this? This is kind of a way maybe to shove some more people in, but I respect the move here. The men's tennis doubles team of Brett Garnett and Ashley Roney. And they're going to be joined. I always go back and forth here. I do believe that it is posthumously as opposed to posthumously, but they're going to be joined after his passing by the late Charles Lawson, track and field administration. Now, they'll be joined by Lee Hennessy and her father, the late Jeff Hennessy, for a Lifetime Achievement Award. So pretty cool stuff and a pretty special group. The 2019 class will be inducted into the Louisiana Athletics Hall of Fame Friday, November 1st. The recognition, as I mentioned, halftime of the Cajuns and Texas State Bobcats on Saturday, November 2nd at Cajun Field. Pretty special group. I mentioned Ike Taylor won some Super Bowls, two of them specifically, had a 12-year NFL career with the Steelers. He played his final two seasons with the Raging Cajuns, a running back in 2001. Local listeners, yeah, they're shaking head up down before he was moved to defense after he was asked to do so by then first-year head coach Ricky Bussell in 2002. So tell me just how old that makes all of us, Clint, because that was, what, two coaches ago now? But the first year that Ricky Bussell came to Cajun Country, he asked Ike Taylor to move from running back to DB, and the rest certainly was history. As the New Orleans native, Ike Taylor recorded 46 tackles in that year, pair of forced fumbles, 8 pass breakups, and that honor tied him with another future NFL veteran, Charles Peanut Tillman, and obviously a current member of the Athletics Hall of Fame for the Raging Cajuns. So that is just old school gets, if you will, brother. I mean, because think about it. You go from Napier to Hudspeth to Bussell, and he started it off, pretty shrewd move. Got to move Ike Taylor to defense. That just might pay dividends, Clint.
And it really did. Just such a great career for Ike Taylor, not just with the Cajuns, but with the Pittsburgh Steelers as well. Like you mentioned, two Super Bowl rings, an absolutely phenomenal player who didn't necessarily fly the UL flag as much as maybe you'd like whenever you watch Sunday Night Football when he'd pop up, but he definitely is well-deserved to be in that Hall of Fame.
See, your memory is serving you well here. Remind the listeners of exactly what he claimed when he was introduced kind of at the bottom of the screen.
He'd introduce himself as swaggin' on you, and I love it, but at the same time, it's like, you could have said UL Lafayette, you know, to show some love.
Oh, man, swaggin' on you. And so always, look, somebody's going to give you a platform. You get to, I guess, use that however it is you'd like. But congrats to Ike Taylor and the rest of the men and women, both with us and after their death, they're going to be inducted into the 2019 Raging Cajuns Athletics Hall of Fame. That is pretty cool stuff. And you know that means we're going to have to get Ike Taylor aboard the program.
Yes.
And that was, frankly, you know, look, I'm going to let you and the rest of our listeners react to this at the same time. I've never said this to you, Clint, but you could probably guess as much. When I first discovered, realized, knew that I would be doing a daily show in Lafayette, I said to myself, okay, getting LSU guests just is not going to be a problem. I know a lot of these guys, these gals. I know a lot of the former players. I told myself, all right, you need to immediately track down three human beings. One of them is Jake DeLome. By and large, that's been a success because he's awesome and very available. I also told myself I got to track down Peanut Tillman. I got to track down Ike Taylor. A combined 0 appearances for those two. So that is a hashtag fail on my part. I also mentioned Brandon Stokely. We had him when he went in last summer, a couple summers ago, to the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame. But, Clint, I've been failing on the Peanut Tillman and the Ike Taylor front. We might need you to step up and be a producer extraordinaire because clearly I'm not getting it done with Cajun secondary royalty.
We're going to have to try extra hard to get him a Charles Tillman because the man is just busy as all get out. Ike Taylor, I feel like, is definitely a little bit more feasible, but we're definitely going to try and get both of those before it's all said and done.
I like the attitude. Yeah, I think Tillman's working for the FBI, so he might just be busy. We'll be right back. Blaine Viator talking prep football next. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Bring Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game along for the ride. We go wherever you go.
Everywhere.
With the 103.7 The Game mobile app.
interrupt our regular programming for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Ready to ride into our final hour on a Thursday. I'm Ben Love, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and pretty pumped up to be back at my Thursday home, the Taproom River Ranch. Glad to have you with us on 103.7 The Game. The famous Clint D with us for the next hour inside the 237 Roof Studios. Like Todd Russ before him, our next guest, wise enough to join me here from the Taproom, Blaine Viator. Before we talk some high school football, got to thank you for guiding the ship without me from the open air Crow Dome, first on B2BS and then the Karen Crow Acadiana game on Friday night. I'm sure you guys had a lot of fun.
It was all a lot of fun, man. The Crow Dome was rocking. People were out there early. It was a great atmosphere. The game didn't end like we wanted, but B2BS was kicking, man. We brought on Karen Crow football legend and LHSA coaching Hall of Famer Mac Byrus to talk some of his time of when he was coaching Karen Crow and guiding him to a 12-4 record against the Rams. Can you believe that, Ben? Against biggest rival in the school history, he was 12-4 in his tenure at Karen Crow. So he had a lot of fun coming in, talking that. And then, you know, LSU, Texas, everybody was jazzed up. So got a bunch of folks to call in, and CD chimed in. It was a lot of fun, man. We cut up and had a good time.
I remember when we used to get phone calls. So maybe you need to host more often, and then I'll just go drive around to KDN and call you up.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said like two words in the opening segment, and CD was hitting me up like, hey, we got callers. I was like, let's roll with it, dude.
I tell people all the time, because they ask, you know, what's it like with that job? And what's it like? I said, well, I mean, the most fun and the easiest simultaneously is something like Bama Week, right? You don't have to say anything. It doesn't matter if LSU wins or loses. People want to talk about it. So basically it's like, all right, welcome to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Boom, Clint's texting me. There's a call. You know what I mean? It's instantaneous. So yeah. I'm glad you got to experience that for UT.
For sure. And I popped in on Thursday and sat with Shakir, and we talked some prep football, which we were so excited to jumpstart the season. We were only a day out at that point. But, look, man, we're already a week into the season. It's something we've been looking forward to for quite a while. And now that it's actually here and we got college, NFL, and pro football, it's the best time of the year.
It's the trifecta. And somebody out there is saying, wait a minute, you guys aren't going to talk like Fatima Cathedral? We'll get to you later in the fall. But for now, I like our game plan today. Want to go with an Acadiana area top five. Here's how we're going to address it. You're going to give your top five, but I'm not going with mine. Why? Because it's going to be basically at least four of the same teams. We may fudge the order a little bit. So I'm going to do something that people usually do to me on my program. I'm going to let you give your five, and then I'm just going to pick the hell out of it and let you know if I agree or disagree. Hit me.
Well, that's pretty tough, but, I mean, look, after a week of football, and look, this would have looked totally different if, you know, we did it last week, and it'll look probably totally different if we do it 3 weeks from now. But I'm going to start at the bottom, and at number five I had VC. And before the season they would have probably been one of my outside teams looking in. But what did VC do? They just beat Brent Indes and Catholic High and UIberia 42-32 in a shootout. I mean, Leger was great and threw for five touchdowns. They were able to move the football at will against Indes and company. I love VC, and I think in Division IV, they're going to be as good as it gets. I have them as the favorite in their classification. And I know this is going to be the argument, you know, that bigger schools are better. But, hey, when you got a quarterback like that humming at that kind of efficiency, I love VC and what they bring to the table.
Always tough when you go to the bigger school versus smaller school discussion. You and I have it all the time, but pretty good example when you have LCA and Westgate. I know it wasn't the game anybody expected in terms of the point level at a 7-0 final, but that was a smaller school beating a bigger one. So some of those gaps are being narrowed and closed.
Right, and I got more on that Westgate-LCA game in segment two that we'll discuss. But at number four, I brought in Eunice. I mean, what's not to love, right? Defending state champions. And what did they do? They went out and beat former district rival Northwest 72-34 in a ball game that they were losing at the start of the fourth quarter. There were six total turnovers in the sixth quarter. I believe they either had a block punt or a punt return for a touchdown. Look, the Bobcats might be moving up to 4A, but defending state champions, that says a lot, you know. So I have them at number four. I think they're a team, as the year goes on, they might slide some, but they're still going to be a good ball club, no matter what they lost off of last year's team. Incredibly well coached. I like Eunice there. At number three, I got Notre Dame. We all knew, you know, how good Notre Dame was, and what did they do in week one? They went beat a Church Point team that you know I'm high on, very high. They walloped Church Point, 48-6 in the open.
With the backup quarterback.
No Bordelon the ball game.
Nope.
I didn't realize
Bordelon's
that.
Been injured, and they held him out, and the backup was absolutely phenomenal. But still, having to do that, that shows you something.
And, I mean, look, this is a Church Point defense that returned something like 7 or 8 starters and really led up front on that defensive line. So for them to do that, and you know they did it all on the ground with that triple threat option attack, I think Catholic High and UIberia is going to be something serious to deal with as the season goes on. And number one and two are the most difficult. Where do I rank these two teams? I went back and forth when we spoke earlier this morning, and I went with STM at number two. And maybe that's not fair. They went over into Yeoman Stadium in New Orleans, and they were able to beat Holy Cross 28-7. And a lot of people say, maybe the offense struggled. Caleb Holstein wasn't as crisp as he was last year. But I don't really think it's fair. And Danny Jones had great in the post game, brought up great points here on 103.7 The Game. But he said that, look, you can't – it's not fair to that team to compare them this early in the season. That team last year didn't play in the tough environment, first game of the year. So what they did to go out there and they got it going a little bit in that second quarter, and they were able to win 28-7 on the road against a 5A opponent that's pretty good in that Catholic League. I think STM's football, their best football, still ahead of them this season. I had them at number two. Number one, we're probably splitting hairs at that point. At number one, I seen them up live in person last week, so I went there. It was pretty – they were good, man. The Acadiana Wrecking Rams, they were so physical. They had the two good running backs, Lucky Brooks, Dylan Monette. Those guys are so squirrely and so hard to bring down. There were multiple times that Karen Crow had them at the line of scrimmage. Next thing you know, Monette's up rushing for a touchdown, and same thing with Lucky Brooks. Keon Williams has gotten a lot better running that offense. They used him some on some quarterback counters. The thing that offense surprised me was they loaded up in this loaded backfield. We called it the inverted wishbone. Two tight ends, but they had three guys right behind Williams, and they ran the hell out of that thing in the third quarter. In tune to about a 9.5-minute drive, he opened the third frame, and after that, that was all she wrote. I mean, Carrico scored that opening touchdown, but Acadiana just dominated along both sides of the line of scrimmage. Figueroa, the defensive end, he's something special. Big kid, lived in the backfield, caused havoc. Acadiana, they're a team that's going to play deep into November, if not December.
So as we had this conversation last year for the 2018 season, now we're having it our debut top five during the season in 2019. It's the same three teams. We're just trying to find an order. I mean, last year it was the same thing. It was Acadiana, St. Thomas More, Notre Dame. Last year, I think a strong case could be made that LCA needed to be at least considered to maybe creep into that back end of those three. We liked Church Point for a while last year. Eunice made a climb. Kaplan made a climb. I think I said before the season that St. Thomas More was the best team in the area and that there might be a little bit of a gap. After 1 week, I don't know that I feel as strongly about that statement, but here's what I will say. I still think that my original statement could hold true by the time the season's over.
Well, look,
because if they get rolling, that offense is unlike anything else that the state has to offer. I mean, seriously.
I agree with you, but I don't.
But they didn't show it one game in.
Well, no, but I mean, Acadiana's best defense is going to be their offense. That Veer attack with the 42nd clock this year in high school football, they'll chew up so much time.
What time did the Karen Crow Acadiana game end? I meant to ask you.
Before
8:45?
No, a little after, but there was a ton of cramping issues.
Gotcha.
A lot of cramping issues in the ballgame, and I think that was across the state. It was a hot 3-day stretch this past weekend. Look, that Veer offense is so demoralizing. It's death by a thousand cuts. They just keep coming at you. So I think Acadiana STM would be a hell of a ball game. I think Acadiana's offense could maybe neutralize, maybe, Shane Savoie and Caleb Holstein and company in that offense.
I'm with you on the top three. I might rank them a little differently just based off of week one performances. I might do Acadiana, Notre Dame, St. Thomas more. But like I told you, I think the Cougars have a chance to be on top of this list by the end of the season. But credit has to be given to the Wrecking Rams and the Pios. They took care of business. One of them did it without their starting quarterback. The other did it on the road in a week one rivalry game, which is pretty tough. So credit to the top three. I agree that VC deserves to be in the top five. Whether they're four or five, I can entertain a lot of discussions. As for the programs that you didn't mention, LCA immediately would jump to mind. And no, they don't have a Zach Clement anymore, and that's going to be a big issue for that team, is finding the best quarterback. I'm going to tell you right now, if it's about winning games, you know who should be quarterback of that
it's
team, right?
It's got to be Aaron Rodgers.
That's not what I was going to say.
Okay.
If it's about winning games, what do you do in high school football? You put your best player at quarterback,
so
right?
You're going to go with
Sage Ryan.
Okay.
I wouldn't even think twice about it. I'm not Trev Falk or whoever their head coach is now listed as. I got love for the Knights. He knows that. But I just...
It just baffles me, though. It's not just Sage Ryan. It's not just Aaron Rodgers, but Logan Gabriel, who was a 1,400 or 1,500-yard rusher.
I don't know
ago.
That Logan right now is quite in the same shape and mentality that he was last year. Some of the things that I've been hearing is that he's come in almost looking to run over people. And look, man, that cat's big enough to do it. But you play Westgate, you ain't just, you know, truck-sticking those cats. It ain't going to happen that way. And so I don't – he's going to have to be as shifty as he was last year. I don't care if we're talking about Class 2A, Class 1A. When you play a team up in level like that, it surprised a lot of people to see that score, and I'm one of them. I didn't think it was going to be 55-48, but at the same time, kudos – to the LCA defense. That's probably the story of that game. But the offense did not be what they were last year. Part of it's Zach Clement not being there, but part of it is they don't yet have an identity at quarterback. When you don't have it there, your whole offense doesn't have it.
No, look, that's a defense that averaged less than 9 points a game last year. It was awfully good. They bring back Fitzgerald West. I think Victor Dupree plays some linebacker over there as well. They got some cats. I think the thing with Westgate is they were able to match them athletically on the perimeter. That doesn't happen very often to LCA. I know a lot of times when you play up in classification, you say you went along the line of scrimmage.
And the word I got, again, obviously I wasn't at that ball game, but the word I got is that while LCA in some cases could match the starters in terms of physicality up front, Westgate had layers of guys, especially on the defensive line they could bring in, and LCA, they don't have those kind of bodies.
Right.
So, hell of a ball game. Kudos to LCA. I would consider them for the top five. I don't know if they quite make mine, but I would consider them. You also didn't mention St. Martinville. What Vince Derwin did last year has to be recognized. How much is it going to carry over to this year? We'll find out. But they went to Cecilia and ushered in a new stadium in St. Martin Parish with a big win.
Rivalry game week one on the road. And, look, I think St. Martinville is a team that has a chance to climb this list, especially as the season gets on. Not only are they in 3A, so they'll get softer competition, but they get some big opportunities against 4A teams, including Karen Crow a little bit down the road.
And I just have to say Kaplan because I want Tank Lotie to come on my show.
He's great, man. Tank's great. You call Tank to come on the show, he's like, Blaine, I don't know if I can't curse for so long.
Did you hear what he said? I know I need to hit a break, Clint, but did you hear what he said the last time he was on my show? My favorite thing is to now talk to high school football coaches about scheduling because none of them like it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Especially when you're good and you're at a lower classification. So he's like, Ben, nobody wants to play us, you know? About the only call that I get, happens every summer, is I'm paraphrasing. He said, you know, my good friend Louis Cook calls me and says, you want to play the Pios this year? And he said, you know, good cousin Lotief will answer the call and say, no problem, we'll see you get our butts kicked in September. That guy's a treasure, man.
Oh, he is, man. He is.
You can't replicate that guy, and I certainly wouldn't want to be the one to try. All right, quick break. When we return, we'll keep it going on the prep side. Best games coming for week two, and maybe a surprise and a disappointment from week one. Stick with us. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We try to never disappoint, and it's easy when you're live at the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
rocking back on. 20 minutes after 6 o'clock. You might have caught us in a little show prep there. We're just that dedicated. And we're hanging out at the Tap Room River Ranch. Ben Love alongside Blaine Viator. Let's get right down to business. We'll look back before we go forward. Give me one week one surprise in a positive direction and then maybe one disappointment for you from the area.
It got to be Southside as big surprise for me in the positive way. I mean, look, their first varsity football game, we know Northside and company's a little bit overwhelmed over there. They don't have the numbers, but to wallop a 4A opponent 66-3 in your first varsity football game, that really got my attention. They were able to sling the football.
I think it was 49-0. Nonetheless.
Okay, 49-0. Yeah. They were able
Shut
to
them out.
They were able to move
I know
the football.
This. I just saw their whole team and cheerleading squad on Tuesday night.
Yeah,
at
they brought a load of people over there, like you were saying. I mean, they were able to just throw the football all over the yard, run a lot of spread stuff, and they got to be a team that I'm not saying they're going to go out there and, you know, go deep into the playoffs, but they have a team that has my attention after week one with a lot of upside to them.
All right, so 49-0 to win Southside at Northside, and they've got your attention, a positive surprise. I don't know if we can call it a negative surprise. We'll say disappointment.
Disappointing to me is the Carrico Bears. Look, they went into Jamboree in week zero, and they beat a good Brobridge team, a Brobridge team that won in week one against Nish 28-6. Carrico dominated them handily in the Kiwanis Jamboree 20-0, where they dominated both sides of the football. And then to come out, and they actually took the 6-0 lead against Acadiana. And after that, that's all she wrote. They had a botched extra point attempt that they attempted a two-point conversion. And then a lot of mental miscues. And just to get dominated on both sides of the line of scrimmage in the second, third, and fourth quarter. As I mentioned earlier, Acadiana went on something like a 9.5-minute drive to open the third frame and really just demoralized Carrico after that. I really had high hopes in that game that Carrico would just compete a little bit better, and it just wasn't the case.
The number one thing that I tell you that I can repeat on the air is that there are levels to things. And when you dust off Brobridge in a Jamboree, that is impressive, and it caught everybody's attention. Acadiana is a different level, man, and that's no disrespect to anybody. I don't have to tell anybody listening in this area that the Wrecking Rams are a different breed of cat. And you think because last year was competitive and close and it was on the road that this year it'll be at home, it's the opener, Carrico's coming off a good showing, and they're obviously better, and they are. Despite the effort from week one, Carrico's better than they were in 2018. It's obvious. You think that this one's going to be close, but it would not surprise me if this Wrecking Rams team was playing in the final, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks of their Class 5A postseason. None of that would surprise me with the squad that they've got coming back this year. World of respect for Matt McCullough and the Wrecking Rams. So, again, I just tell you this all the time.
There's levels to this.
I know you don't have to be reminded, but now you have been, and you'll punch me in the face after the segment. I'm going to give you one more potential positive surprise candidate. I have no issue with telling you I really didn't know what to expect from Dane Chipanche and the Terlings Catholic Rebels this year. And I still don't know how competitive they'll be in a rough-and-tumble 5-4A district. Time will tell. But what they did to a Como team with juniors and seniors all up and down the starting 22, college-level talent, that caught my attention. 35-20, I know it was played at Rebel Stadium, but I don't care. I just didn't know what to think about Terlings coming into this year. And like you said with Southside, now they've got my attention. And now if the Rebels accomplished a little bit more against additional quality opposition, I wouldn't be as surprised as I would have been, say, I don't know, 7 or 8 days ago. So kudos to the Rebels. That's a great season opening win.
And I think it was a critical year for Dane Chipanche and company, and they're playing like that. Look, Sammy LeBlanc's finally healthy, Ben. Last year, played injured almost the entire year, wasn't quite himself. He was sore healthy on Friday night. It looked a lot better. And I was surprised how physical that Terling's team was. They were able to run the football a little bit, take away the run from Como. They lost Garrett Thomas along the offensive line. That didn't really matter to him. They have my attention, and Dane Chipanche, you really got to give him credit. After 2 years where he kind of struggled a little bit, it looks like he has the ship going in the right direction.
All right, let's move it along a little bit. After looking back, we go forward. I know there are some ball games across the area and state tonight, but by and large, week two gets going tomorrow night. Give me your best game of the week involving area teams.
To me, it's got to be Barb at STM. Last week, Barb, I mean, they beat just an overmatched LaGrange team, 44-13. STM was able to take care of Holy Cross, as we mentioned, 28-7. I think this is a game that has potential to possibly to be a shootout. I know STM's defense last year wasn't that great. Looks much improved this year. You can say that about the Cougars after week one. But Barb is a team that can score a ton of points. I think this is an opportunity for Caleb Holstein and company to come out and sling the football around and get kind of in the groove, so to speak. I think this is really a game that's going to be very entertaining and exciting, and it's here in Lafayette at STM.
I'll give you a few more, and I do agree that might just be the area game of the week. I'm very intrigued by Ruston at Acadiana. This game a year ago in North Louisiana had a game-winning Hail Mary that quite literally made it all the way to national publication. Ruston last week played a one-point game against Neville. That tells me one thing. They're pretty good. And so Ruston coming down to the Hub City this year. Technically Scott, and they'll take on the Wrecking Rams. That one should be a lot of fun. Maybe the most underrated matchup of the weekend. Could be sliding under some radars, and I've got some pointed thoughts on it. OC at VC. What do those initials mean? Opelousas Catholic that had a big 34-0 shutout win in week one. We know the prodigious talent they're starting to build in the op. Then there's VC, which took care of Catholic New Iberia, 42-32. And Brent Indest has told me before, and he's not shy about saying it, usually they call when they're pretty good to schedule you, right? And so VC knows they've got that type of squad this year. They've got this one at home. Opelousas Catholic taking a trip south. I think this one isn't grabbing as many headlines as it should. And here's where I probably lose some friends just north of us. I think VC wins it by double digits.
You mentioned it earlier. I'm going to use your old analogy on yourself. There's levels to this stuff.
I know.
Man. VC's just on a different level. I think OC's getting closer, and I think they'll even have a better team next year. But there's just levels to this. VC will contend for a 4A championship. OC's not quite there.
Division 4.
Division 4 championship where OC might play in the second weekend. You know, it's just levels to this stuff. And Leger's just clicking right now on all cylinders.
Catholic New Iberia at Bro Bridge, not bad either. My bold prediction there, this is a week where Brent Indest and company open up a boomstick and a tone from last week. So, again, if I were just throwing out predictions, which I am wont to do, I would go with a double-digit win for the Panthers.
My next, or my off the cuff, below the radar kind of pick, Church Point at Southside. Look, Southside beat the unmatched team. This Church Point team is a pretty good 3A team, we think. I know they got walloped in week one, but let's see what they could bounce back against the 5A Southside and see if Southside can keep that momentum going. That one kind of intrigues me.
It's a good one. That's a real good one.
Church Point. Notre Dame, too.
I like that. Let's remind folks, Church Point versus Southside will be at this year's home for the Sharks, at least for the next 2 years, I believe. They'll be playing at Turlings Catholic. All right, we're all out of time. Halfway through our 6 o'clock hour. A lot of fun, man. Tomorrow night we'll have Karen Crow versus Nish in the open-air Crow Dome. Coach Todd Russ and I were having a little fun with that off the air, but we'll bring it on the air tomorrow, Z105.9. Looking forward to it.
I can't wait, man. It's the best time of year, and we get to do it each and every week. So I'll see the good folks of Acadiana tomorrow night.
Quick break, and then I'm right back at it. How about an NFL Thursday night preview? Bucks, Panthers, yuck. We're still going to talk about it. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, coming right back to the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Take a walk on the wild side on your Saturday morning under the dome with the world-famous CD.
Do you know who I am? I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
From the preps to the pros, he's got you covered with the expert analysis you've come to expect to get you amped up for the weekend ahead. Jumpstart your Saturday morning with Under the Dome with the world-famous CD. Saturdays from 10 a.m. to noon on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Hopefully that wets your whistle for some high school football talk. We'll have a lot more of it tomorrow. Bumper to Bumper Sports runs from 4 to 6, and then Football Night in Acadiana takes over from 6 to 6:30. Myself alongside RP3. Yeah, we're going to double team it starting tomorrow. Looking forward to it. It's Football Night in Acadiana pregame style from 6 to 6:30. And then after the STM postgame show is over, Clint Domang brings you home. Football Night in Acadiana. Post game. You can hear all of it on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
Let's make the leap from high school to the pros. From talking all that prep football with Blaine Viator. I want to get to Thursday night football. Quick primer tonight. It'll be the Bucks at the Panthers. A couple of 0-1 teams in the Saints division. The NFC South will have the whole game for you. 7 o'clock, as soon as Clint and I are done. The pregame show, 7:20 kickoff from Charlotte. And a pretty good topic has been scrolling across most of the TV screens here at the Taproom River Ranch. Who is there more on the line for in this game? And it's taking a look at the two quarterbacks. Is it Cam Newton for the Panthers or Jameis Winston for the Bucks? There are a couple different ways to look at this, Clint. I'll spit, and then I want to get your reaction. My two cents, I believe there's probably more in general on the line for Jameis because Cam's job isn't in question. But Jameis Winston for the Bucks, I can make a strong case as well. Marcus Mariota for the Titans. They went 1-2 in the draft at this point about 4 years ago. Neither has really and completely lived up to the hype. The Titans have been wildly mediocre, and Mariota isn't pushing them over the hump. The Bucks have been below the Mendoza line, right? Less than good, maybe less than average even. And despite many times good stats, the win column isn't always filled up. So those two guys in the same draft class are in a prove-it year. And we've already seen that for reasons sometimes on the field and off, the Bucks aren't afraid to just straight up move away from Winston. Everybody remembers Fitzmagic from a year ago. Is that something that could happen again? Is Jameis in danger of losing his job if they're 0-2 and he keeps throwing picks? Anything's on the table, and it's possible. So from a job security standpoint, Clint, yes, there's more on the line for Jameis. But follow me here. Here's what's on the line for Cam. If they begin the season 0-2, and it continues to look like a team where, one of my favorite phrases, you've heard me say it before, somebody's got to play Atlas and put the team and the world on his shoulders. In the Panthers' case, it seems to be Christian McCaffrey. If they look like that again tonight, and we know their defense is starting to lose a step or two from the groups that had Thomas Davis roaming the middle and Luke Kuechly being one of the best linebackers in the league, those aren't exactly staples anymore of that defense. Not like they used to be, and in some cases, not at all. And so the defense in Carolina is taking a step back. Even with some decent receivers like DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, I don't know that they quite have it anymore in terms of pass catchers to support Cam. He's getting older. He's not going to run as much. So here's my point, Clint. With an 0-2 start, I think there is a good bit that may be on the line because very quickly in front of our eyes, this Panthers franchise may be getting old. And so what does that mean? That Cam Newton may wake up and the sun is starting to set on his chances to get back to the Super Bowl as a member of that franchise. So I don't know if that's overstating things for Cam, but I do think that there are some things on the line, at least perception-wise, for his side of the ledger tonight.
I'd have to agree with you on that side, Ben, but at the same time, I just feel like when you just think about it, Jameis Winston, there's a lot on the line, a lot more on the line for him because he knows that if he keeps doing what he's been doing since last year, throwing interceptions left and right, because if I'm not mistaken, it was 2 interceptions and 3 fumbles in the season opener last week. That's not exactly the best way to kind of start things off for your 2019 campaign. If that keeps going, they wind up 0-2, 0-3. I think eventually Bruce Arians is like, I can't pull off the quarterback whispering that I've been able to do with several other quarterbacks. I need to find somebody else that can be that guy.
It's not an appetizing Thursday night football game. I think that much is obvious, right? We'd all rather something different. But here's the good news for Saints fans. One of the teams in your division is going to be 0-2 tonight, and they're going to have not only questions, they're going to have upset fans, upset coaches, and upset players, and that is not a bad place to be if you're the Saints, because let's also remember that fourth member of the NFC South, the Atlanta Falcons are playing, I believe it's Sunday night football, that's right, it's Sunday night, they're at home against the Philadelphia Eagles. Eagles are favored by 1 in that ball game. So I think Vegas recognizes on a neutral field, Eagles might be 4 points better. I think they're the better team. So there's a chance if the Saints can keep their wits about them during this West Coast swing that they could take a commanding early season lead in the NFC South. I know it's early. I don't want to overreact or overprognosticate, but everybody thought the Saints would be good. We all wondered who else would be good in the NFC South. Tonight, you're going to learn who is right off the bat bad in the NFC South. So Thursday Night Football coming up on the other side of this program, on the other side of this break. I've got good news for you. The boys, the girls, the men and the women alike, we're going to bring back a Q&A replay with one of our best guests and a guy that was with us basically from conception on B2BS, Shea Dixon. He joined us Tuesday. We're going to bring back the flip the script portion of the show where he fires away at me on LSU football. Joe Burrow, the defense, was one a mirage? Is the other a problem? That and a whole lot more. So I promise you don't want to go anywhere unless you're driving here, in which case keep listening and come out to the Tap Room River Ranch. After we're done at 7, they'll have live music. Eric Gotro laying down the sound from 8 until 11. We'll be right back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 103.7 The Game.
You're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Right back in one more time. We're live from the Taproom River Ranch. Who's 0-1? Okay, Tampa's 0-1. Who else? Carolina. And they're going to play within the next 25 to 30 and maybe 35 minutes. Soon enough, you'll have Bucks at the Panthers. You can hear it all live from Charlotte here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game, but we're not done with you just yet. We've had tremendous guests so far today. Lynn Scarborough, Gordy Rush, Todd Russ, Blaine Viator. Of course, we had a pretty darn good one on Tuesday. Each and every Tuesday, Shea Dixon, go247.com, good enough to walk the plank. Because, well, he gets to ask me a lot of questions. And I think that's the most fun part, right? I always have to ask the question. So the one time a week that somebody comes aboard and hits me up, yeah, I'm all in for that. And we wanted to make sure to kick that back your way. Let's do that right about now. It'll be LSU football heavy. Shea, asking me questions. What more do you want? For the uninitiated, we flip the script. We give the show to Shea, and he fires away at me. So, brother, do your best.
My man, okay, we're bringing back a very popular segment on Flip the Script. It's buy or sell because we've got a lot of LSU fans out there hyped up. We're trying to figure out if they're too hyped up. So we're going to cut through some of the different levels of this. Let's start with this. Buy or sell, and some of these are just going to blow your mind that we're even talking about it. But Joe Burrow going from off the board, 200-1 in some places, to a 5-1 Heisman odd candidate, making him one of the top candidates in the country right now. We're 2 weeks in. It's an award they give in December. You buying or selling that Joe Burrow is hanging around as a Heisman contender?
I'm definitely buying it for now. I would say he's a top two or three contender right now, right? The 10th day of September. I probably won't have him winning it in the long run. But who freaking cares? He's got a chance to lead maybe the best team in the country. And I know that sometimes that award and that distinction I just mentioned go hand in hand, right? The best player on the best team. Sometimes it works out that way. Of course, recently it's been the guy with the most just video game mind-numbing stats, which means he has to play quarterback for Oklahoma. And the guy that plays quarterback for Oklahoma this year, pretty darn good as well. I would probably have Jalen Hurts as my front runner if I had to give it out today. I've got Joe Burrow deservedly in the top three. Here saying that he sticks around in the top 3 to 5 for, I don't know, maybe a month or so. I'll say he doesn't win it long term, Shea, but the fact that we're having this conversation, to your point, it's a credit to the offensive staff, it's a credit to the player, and it's a credit to a huge performance in Austin.
Well, the next one might make your head spin even more here. And this was from CBS. CBS Sports did a mock draft today. They had Joe Burrow as a first-round pick, the third quarterback off the board. Obviously, they have Tua at number one to the Dolphins, who may not win a game. Justin Herbert out of Oregon. It is not Justin Herbert. Obviously, I thought that right when I originally saw him playing big-time ball at Oregon, but he's not from down here. So beyond him, it's Burrow on their board. The only other quarterback, no Fromm, none of the other guys in the mix are draft eligible. But I'll frame it to you this way, because it's already far-fetched enough. 2 weeks ago, people would have asked if Joe Burrow was getting drafted. Are you buying Joe Burrow, and unlike the Heisman, it really doesn't matter if he beats Bam or loses some games along the way, are you buying what you've seen from Joe Burrow, if it continues, as being a first, second, third round type quarterback in this year's NFL draft?
Boy, I don't know about first round. I also don't think it's impossible. So what am I telling you? This one for me is a trickier question, Shay, than your Heisman inquiry. Because Heisman's kind of about your productivity and what you're doing right now. What you're asking me this time around is about who you're going to be in the future and projecting. And this one's tough. And so maybe a little bit reluctantly, I'm going to sell Joe Burrow as a first-round pick. I don't know that you make that meteoric of a rise and stay there. That said, boy, he's got a lot of the tools, doesn't he? He seems to be somebody who is incredibly cool and confident under pressure. I think that it might be a little hard to believe that there's not at least somewhat of a mirage of this guy going from barely a 50% completion guy in 2018 to somebody who might just blow the roof off the mother in 2019. There are some things he has to show in terms of sustainability on film. He's got the capability maybe of being a first-round pick, but I'm going to sell that he will be one. Now, if you were to extend that to say, is he a Thursday or Friday night guy, right, which means a first, second, or third-round pick, then I'd probably buy that. But if it's first-round exclusively, I might have to pump the brakes on that for now.
All right, we're selling it. Let's think, and this is also sort of a big picture in a way, but what you've seen so far, and all that matters is when they release this college football playoff rankings, everyone's going to be battling for four spots. And I'm not asking you about then. I'm just asking you, knowing the teams, knowing how they've looked, knowing all of that, LSU, buying or selling that they are one of the four best teams in the country right now?
Yes. In fact, I think they might be one of the three best teams in the country right now. I said on the show yesterday, Shay, the three that are above them are the three best established programs in the country, and there's probably a gap between however you like to rank them. Clemson, Alabama, Georgia. Alabama, Clemson, Georgia. It would be in that order. But it's those three, and then in the college football playoff era, or at least since Kirby Smart's got to Athens, it's those three, a gap, and then probably some combination of Oklahoma and Ohio State. That's year in, year out. That's sustainability. That's a program. This is an individual season, and nobody's got a bigger win than LSU does. Nobody's got an offense that has improved as much as LSU's has, with as much talent as LSU is returning defensively. That being said, the Tigers have to prove some things defensively, in my opinion, against the high octane offense after Saturday night. So, yeah, Shay, I'm buying they're a top four team. I even think they're a top three team right now. And I think there's a good chance they can stay that way all season long. I had them at 11-1. My preseason prediction was 11-1. The only loss was at Bama, and that they would backdoor into the college football playoff after Bama beats a top four Georgia team in Atlanta. So I right now they're where I thought they would be. But offensively, they've shown even more than kind of I anticipated to this point. So I think that this for me is a buy, and I see that one pretty clearly. Not a lot of fog in the glasses.
I'm with you there. I'm with you on the 11-1, so we're still at the same spot. Here's what people are going to be concerned. We were having so much fun, right, talking about all that. People are going to say, Ben, they gave up 500-plus yards to Texas. They gave up 38 points, whatever it was, to Texas. They fell apart, basically, from the midway through the third quarter on. Are you buying or selling that LSU's defensive showing in that game was an anomaly and not indicative of anything that's to come or any worry spots this team might have?
This is the hardest question you've asked me, and it's not even close, because I see this one on both sides of the fence. I'll tell you what I'll do, Shay. I'm going to buy with extreme caution that it is an anomaly. right? I'm going to buy the fact that this isn't how they'll look against the better, faster, more modern offenses all season long. And here is why. I gave this example in the show yesterday, but I think it bears repeating. Do you remember the West Virginia game in Morgantown in 2011? Geno Smith and company absolutely dissected the best LSU defense that I've seen in my lifetime. I mean, just absolutely dissected them. Honey Badger, Mo Claiborne, Sam Montgomery, Kiki Mingo, Michael Brockers. I could play this game all day. Brandon Taylor, Eric Reed. I mean, future freaking pros. And Geno Smith and West Virginia just cut a rug on them, right? So that didn't mean that was a bad defense. It means they were in a certain environment against an offense with a head coach that knew how to get its own. And I think I can make a lot of strong comparisons to that West Virginia team and this Texas team. That West Virginia environment and that Austin environment on Saturday night. Now, that LSU defense bounced back to put absolute handcuffs on Alabama that season on the road, to put handcuffs on a really good Arkansas team that season in Tiger Stadium, put handcuffs on Georgia in Atlanta. And so I think there's a chance that using that example, sure, this could be an anomaly, but I'm not 100% convinced that it is, because that was the worst game I've seen from Grant Delpit since his freshman season. They were cramping everywhere. All right, fine. Is that an excuse or is that a reason why they had some depth problems? We're going to find out. So I'm going to buy Shea that it's an anomaly, but with extreme caution, because this group that came in with a whole lot of accolades preseason, now they've got the most to prove of anybody on the team. It's not the freshman kicker. It's not the revamped offense. It's the defense that we thought was going to be legit with one of the best coordinators in the country. They still could be, but now they got to show us something.
I like it. Hey, we're back. Flip the scripts back. I'm back. The show, I'm loving it. This is going to be a good football season. When LSU's winning, it makes our segments a lot more fun, Ben.
No question. LSU does what they did in Texas. The Saints do what they did to a team from Texas last night. Just about everybody in South Louisiana loving life right now. Shea, it's great to have you back. Let's do it again next Tuesday.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Ben.
Never gets old for me to tell you that was so nice we played it twice. It's kind of like the United States men's basketball team. Apparently in the FIBA World Cup, losing is so nice that they did it twice. Thought I wouldn't fit that in 3 hours today. Can't believe we lost to Serbia. Come on now, France, then Serbia. Is the former nation of Yugoslavia going to beat us next week? This is embarrassing, and we must put a stop to it. Elite-level NBA players, I know you're not getting paid a lot of scratch. I know you just played like a 100-game season if you went through the playoffs a good bit. But we need you back, and we need all of our guests today to come back early and often. They were spectacular. Again, I want to tip the cap to Lynn Scarborough, Lindy's Magazine, Gordy Rush, LSU football sideline reporter, Todd Russ, Nish, Yellow Jackets, basketball. Stop by. That was a breath of fresh air. Good to hear him chat on the Southwest Regional Coaches Clinic. And, of course, Blaine Viator at the top of this hour, all in on prep sports. And we are all out of time. For the famous Clint D, my name is Ben Love. You're going to get the Panthers and the Buccos live from Charlotte coming up next. I'll catch you tomorrow, 4 o'clock on a football Friday. But for today, this has been Bumper to Bumper Sports from Acadiana Sports Station and from the Taproom River Ranch, but always on 103.7 The Game.